The Assistant Chief Officer, Brett Lachlan, is the Director of Preparedness for the CFS, and we've got him on the telephone as we head towards the summer. G'day, Brett.
Good afternoon.
Well, 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 what are just some of the elementary things that, you know, things that you nearly take for granted, you see on a daily basis, what are some of the things that people who are living in areas vulnerable to bushfires should be doing around their property, some of the basic stuff they should be attending to right now?
Yeah, look, it's a great question, and it's something that we do think that people probably misunderstand, because there are some really simple steps that people can take, and they're things that you can do very easily that have a tangible impact on your levels of preparedness for the fire season. Yeah. One of those big ones is having that 5-minute bushfire plan, knowing where you're going to go, what you're going to do in the event of a fire or those high-risk fire days occurring is just vital, because we know that under pressure, under stress, people make poor decisions, and doing that planning beforehand is a really good way of ensuring that you're ready for those fires. So that's one of the biggest things that we ask that people do. In terms of clearing up around your property, it's about managing your fuel, or you know, the vegetation, which we call the fuel on your yeah. property. So keeping your grass short, making sure you've got a bit of a defendable space around your house. There's clearances that you can do under the native vegetation rules if you haven't done any clearing before. And there's a range of information about that on our website that can help. But there's some very simple things, and we really ask that people devote some time to doing that now, because it's only going to get hotter and the risk is only going to increase.
Brent, what are some of those simple things?
So, like I said, just making sure you've got that defendable space, keeping your grass short, making yeah. sure your gutters don't have leaves and debris in there that's accumulated over winter. If you've got a big pile of timber right up against your house from winter, it might be a good time now to move that away from the house, so that if there is a fire and there's embers in the air, they don't find a good source of fuel right next to your house to start fire. So there's a range of things there. And then that bushfire plan, we want people to do that bushfire plan.
Brett, what's the word you're getting from the Bureau? What's the outlook for this coming summer, early into the new year? Effectively, is it as gruesome as it was at this time last year, when we're getting all sorts of dire warnings, and understandably so, because it proved to be just disastrous?
Yeah, we are in a bit of a different season to probably the last two. The last two fire seasons, we saw sort of prolonged effects of drought. We saw limited winter rainfall, very limited spring rainfall. And we went into summer with you know, some pretty horrendous conditions that, as you said, resulted in some significant fires. This time around, we've had some winter rain. We've actually had some spring rain, which has been nice. So it is a little bit different in that that those drought conditions aren't as present as they were. The Bureau is also telling us that there's the outlook includes a La Nina event. Now, La Nina is the event that typically brings more rainfall to Australia, but that more rainfall is typically centred around the east coast. So even though we can see some positive effects of it in South Australia, it's not a guarantee that we will see more rainfall. So we're feeling a bit more comfortable than we were last year. There's no denying that. But this is we're saying that there's still a normal fire season for South Australia. And yeah. in a normal fire season, there's plenty of risk. There's going to be days like we've already had where it's going to be hot, it's going to be windy. And whenever we see those ingredients come together, we've got everything we need for some fast-moving and dynamic fires. And we've seen that already. I mean, just on Friday with the fire at Templars, yesterday with the fire at Ullabri, and even a couple of weeks ago with the fire at Yamali, there's been some pretty big fires already around the state. So do take the risk seriously, even though it's perhaps not as dire as we were looking last year.
It's 20 minutes to two. We're talking with the gentleman. One of his tasks is the Director of Preparedness for the CFS, Assistant Chief Officer Brett Lachlan. Brett, this is from Cassandra. You've got a question for Brett, whether it be an email or a text or a telephone call. Here's the opportunity of getting the good advice. Cassandra said, you mentioned before, what is this 5-minute plan? What does that envisage? What's that all about?
So it's on our website, and you go on, you follow the link, and it gives you all the instructions there to make a plan for you and your family. So some of that planning will be, are you going to stay and defend? And, you know, it talks you through what's involved in making that pretty significant decision. If you decide you're not going to stay and defend, it talks you through what sort of things you need to do to be prepared to leave and to leave early. Locations like things like the location you will leave to. What sort of things you should take from your home when you're leaving, because you might have you know, relatively short window of time to prepare, and you want to make sure you grab the right things that you actually need. It encourages you to have a plan for pets if you've got them. We know that, you know, so many people have dogs, cats, horses, etc. And unfortunately sometimes they aren't included in the planning. So the plan talks you through all of those things. And what it is it's peace of mind for you and your family that when something happens, you know what you're going to do and you're ready for it. So that's why it's such an important thing to do. There's endless research from around the country that says the benefits of having the plan are significant. So that's one of the big things we encourage people to do.
Elizabeth but Lobethal says, gentlemen, I hope this is not a silly question. She says, is it true or is it a myth that birds will disappear long before the threat of bushfire arrives?
It's... So it depends. Some birds are actually drawn to fire. So yeah. We know that kites and some of those sort of species will be drawn to the fire because the smaller animals, insects, are obviously fleeing from the fire and it creates an opportunity for them to feed. So I guess it does depend on the species. But one of the better things to rely on rather than the birds would be obviously our website, social media platforms where we have all the warnings information, our partnership with our emergency service broadcast partners who will break into programming to share our warning messages. And, of course, the Alert SA app, which you can set up for a watch area that can notify you of any incidents in your area.
Brett, looking towards the summer, and it starts tomorrow and then into next year, are there areas of the state, even at this stage, that you say are more at risk than some other areas?
At this point, what we're saying is we see that risk is pretty broad across the whole state. So there's no area we've singled out as saying there's very significant above normal fire potential there, which is what we did last year for Kangaroo Island and the Eyre Peninsula and places where, unfortunately, those predictions came true.
Yeah.
But this year we're saying that there's an equal risk of fire across the whole state. If you're in an area where you've had some good spring rain, if you're in an area where, you know, you do a lot of cropping and you've had some very good crops, you probably know that you've got some pretty good grass growth around out there. So if you're in those areas and you know there's a lot of grass that's growing, those are areas that might have some increased risk maybe of, you know, grass fires this season, and that's something that we'd ask people to be mindful of as well.
If you've got a question, there's always questions, especially as we head towards summer, about bushfire safety. Here's the chance to get some really expert advice from a fellow who looks at it on a daily sort of a basis. Murray sends us an email. He said, as a regular visitor to KI, he said, after the devastation and the loss of life last year, surely to God there can't be much more to burn over there.
If only that were the case. So
no.
The fire burnt out about 48% of the landmass of the island, but that still leaves a solid 52%, and there's some big untouched areas. Fortunately, there's some big untouched areas that weren't burnt, impacted by the fire across the central and eastern part of the island. So KI remains an area that we take the risk very seriously. And, you know, there are places now where you can drive through the hills around Lobethal and Woodside where in the grassed areas in particular, you would be hard-pressed to tell there was a fire, the regrowth that's occurred thanks to all that rainfall. So just because you might be in an area where there was fire last season is by no means an indication that you're okay for this coming one.
It's 16 minutes to two. Anne's email on air at 5AA.com.au. Pilko, can you ask the gentleman? Well, the gentleman is is Brett Lachlan from the CFS. Anne's question is, will we, if indeed needed, have access to more planes to fight any bushfires that break out here this year?
Yeah, definitely. So we've retained all the aircraft that we had last season, which gives us a significant number of fixed-wing water bombers, as well as the Ericsson air crane. We're also working through at the moment the national arrangements around the large air tankers. So people will remember that there are a number of high-risk fire days where we were able to bring the large air tankers in from their home bases in the eastern states. And so there's some work going on in that regard as well through what's called the National Aerial Firefighting Coordination centre. So they help make sure that these critical strategic assets like the LATs and the VLATs, the very large air tankers, are managed and are in the right locations nationally when required. So we retain all that access. We've also improved some of our intelligence gathering capabilities by installing some new high-tech gadgets onto one of our observation helicopters that help us better map fires and see through smoke where the fire actually is. So our aviation fleet remains pretty cutting edge, and we're pretty comfortable with having those available.
We're talking with Brett Lachlan. Brett is the Director of Preparedness for Operations at the CFS, talking about the looming bushfire season. And it happens every year, let's face it. We're always confronted with the danger. Effectively, the beginning of summer tomorrow, Tuesday the 1st of December. Yours is a question. Here's the opportunity, putting it directly to the man himself on 8223 0000, that number of ours.
The St John Christmas Home Lottery ends next week. Don't miss out. With 30,000 prizes, there's a 1 in 5 chance of winning. The grand prize package includes a Samuel James mansion, Marina Front holiday home, Range Rover, boat, and $250,000 cash. One ticket will win it all. Plus, buy your ticket before midnight Sunday to be in the weekly draw to win your very own corporate box for next summer's International Cricket Spectacular. Visit stjohnlottery.com.au to buy your ticket today. Lottery license number M13894.
The largest Harvey Norman clearance store in Australia is now open at Marion, with electrical, furniture, bedding, outdoor and flooring. Big brand name run-out models, supplier surplus, last year's models, scratch and dent, refurbished, factory seconds and new. Come and see the Harvey Norman clearance store at Marion for great deals store-wide. 4,000 square metres of electrical, furniture, bedding, outdoor and flooring with new stock arriving weekly. Open 7 days. Look for the building with the big red clearance signs at 919 Marion Road, Marion.
Matthew, down at Morfordville, you'll be our next caller for Brett Lachlan in a moment or so. It's just on 13 minutes to 2. We're quickly learning that to save money on power bills, solar on its own simply is not enough. And this is where the people at the Sharp Energy Hub informs us that feed-in tariffs are falling and the time-of-use tariffs are being implemented. Of course, the average home uses most of their power early in the morning and evening when solar production is low. So this really underlines the importance of having a home battery storage, does it ever? And this is why Sharpie and the crew down there have got an exclusive limited offer. Here's the offer. Right now, you can get a clean and reliable 15-kilowatt Sonnenhome battery for the price of a 10-kilowatt home battery. I'll repeat that. You'll be getting a 15-kilowatt Sonnenhome battery for the price of a 10-kilowatt battery. And after the subsidy, the government, the battery subsidy, you pay just $8,990. An amazing offer. It's only available. And it's an offer available right now. Give them a call at the Sharp Energy Hub, or go online, or even better still, go on down and see them at 71 Port Road at Thibbenham. The Sharp Energy Hub, saving thousands through intelligent energy solutions. And as they say, in this day and age, it underlines the importance of having a home battery storage. And the offer available right now with the Sharpie and the crew down there is a 15-kilowatt Sonnenhome battery for the price of a 10-kilowatt battery for $8,990. Find out more about it, visit the showroom, or go online, thesharpenergyhub.com.au, or the address, better still, is 71 Port Road down there at Thurbiton.
Have you ever worried that you won't have enough super for your retirement, or wondered how to best start planning for retirement? Your local statewide super hub is where you'll find real people who can answer your super questions and provide support in your journey towards retirement. We know it's nice to speak to someone in person. That's why we're here. The Super Hub by Statewide Super, 211 Victoria Square. Love your super with Statewide Super. This advertisement contains general advice. Before making an investment decision, obtain independent financial advice and consider the applicable PDS.
Few people realise that every funeral firm buys its funeral components from the same suppliers, and we all pay the same price. Coffins, press notices, flowers, cremation fees, and then the biggest items, overheads and profits. A funeral service in our chapel starts at just $2,975. I can't believe anyone would want to contribute more to an undertaker's overheads and profits. They contribute nothing to dignity or sincerity. I'm Shanti Russell, Sensible Funerals.
Do you think a concert pianist needs a builder's license?
No.
Does a chartered accountant need one?
Highly unlikely, Will.
Yes, but what about a house inspector?
Well, surely they need one.
No. Unfortunately, there are no regulations in the industry that say you must be a builder to become a house inspector. Mike Pearl from House Inspect Australia is a third-generation licensed builder, and his team is the most qualified team in Australia for house inspections.
It's the biggest purchase decision of your life, so don't risk it. Go to House Inspect Australia. Australia.com.au.
Here at 5AA, we're all about supporting local. Head to the Village Tavern, snuggled in the heart of Golden Grove, for a $15 pint and palmy. Lunch and dinner Monday to Thursday. The Village Tavern, sports bar and beer garden only.
Enjoy the party atmosphere every Sunday at the Jeff's Cross Market, with stalls, homemade treats, fresh fruit and veg, arts, crafts, bric-a-brac and more. Wallace Cinema's mainline drive-in on Main North Road from 7 a.m. every Sunday for the Jeff's Cross Market. Visit wallace.com.au.
Scraped your caravan? Walker Crash Repairs, an RAA-approved caravan crash repairer. This is Tony Pilkington.
Little after 10 to 2 on this lovely Monday afternoon, we're talking with Brett Lachlan from the CFS. Brett's title is the Director of Preparedness, and this is the sort of thing we've got to do as we head towards summer. Brett, we've got to Tracy from Upper Hermitage is giving you a call. Hello, Tracy.
Hello, hi. Hi to both of you. Yes, I would just like to know what prevention has been put in place in the Adelaide Hills area of Upper Hermitage, Lower Hermitage.
So there's been a range of hazard reduction burns that have been undertaken by the Department of Environment and Water. So their National Parks Division, they undertake the burning on the government land around the place, and they've been doing a fair bit of work, even in amongst some of the COVID restrictions, to reduce fuel load in various areas at strategic locations. So there's been a big body of work going on in that. In terms of some other things we've done to prepare, obviously we've had the independent review done by Mr. Mick Kelty. We're also digesting the outcomes from the Royal Commission, so there's a range of improvements we're trying to make from both of those sort of inquiries that have occurred. We're also, done our normal upgrades and preparedness to our fleet, all our training. So we're as prepared as we can be as a fire service, and now I guess we're asking people to join us in being prepared as well and making sure they've got those survival plans and have done some of that property maintenance themselves.
Now, on that basis, there's been no clearing up here in this area at all. Is it at all possible to have somebody from your organisation to come and actually have a look? I mean, we have a buffer behind the houses that's overgrown. They don't allow anyone to trim anything, and a fire truck can't get in because there's trees and it's overgrown. And it's been like it for years. And I've sent photographs to Minister Spears. I've emailed practically every politician known to man, and nobody's doing anything at all. And it is a high fire risk area.
Well, I'm happy to get some of the details. If perhaps the team at the station can get some of your details, and we can make some contact with you off air and work out how best we can help you. This is often a question we get when people feel they have a fire hazard that they're concerned about. One of the first steps is to report to your local council. Each council has fire prevention officers who are trained in.
Yes, I have done that. Yep. I have done it for both councils, because Tea Tree Gully is one side, Adelaide Hills is the other side of the road. And I've been doing it this summers. I've begged to, would somebody come and look and do something about the grass? No, I don't get any joy from either side, really.
Tracy, the thing to do will be, we'll put you back to Josh. He'll get the details, and I'm sure that that Brett at a time, pretty soon, I reckon, will be in touch with you, and you can actually discuss it nearly face-to-face to Morfordville this time around. And Brett, Matthew's on the line for you. Hello, Matthew.
G'day, Philco, and to Brett. Brett, question regarding the logistics involved in the bomber aircraft, or air water bombers. It doesn't seem to take long to empty them when they fly over, when we see the vision on the news, but how long does it take to fill them up again?
Yeah, it's a great question. So it depends on the type of platform. The smaller fixed-wing bombers hold about 3,000 litres of water. And just as we have specialist trained firefighters who man the fire trucks, you know, on the front line of the fire, we also have highly trained airbase operations personnel who go to the nearest airbase that we open up so that the planes have a quick turnaround from landing and being able to be refilled to getting back to the fire. So these specialist firefighters go to the airbases, and then they've got all the equipment they need to quickly refill the aircraft. And we can refill a fixed-wing water bomber of about 3,000 litres in about 2 minutes. So the thing lands very quickly. The crew race out. The plane's still on. They connect the hose, they chuck, you know, the 3,000 litres of water into it, and the thing's gone again. We put an F1 pit crew to shame, I'm pretty confident.
Right, Matthew, an answer to that one. Gee, 2 minutes. Brett, just finally, Laney at Balea. My question for Brett is, what does he suggest to do regarding dangerously fuelled Crown land? My neighbours and I have been complaining for years about dense grasses and logs and fuel. In this case, it's the Panara railway station line, and the embankment joins our properties. That's from Laney at Balea with concerns about that. What's the best way of attacking it from her point of view?
So as I was saying to Tracy, the responsibility in the first instance rests by reporting it to your local council, to their fire prevention officer team, and they can arrange to do an inspection. The legislation that we operate under means that you can't issue a notice of works to Crown land, but there is a process that's established in South Australia that allows local government fire prevention officers to raise their concerns about Crown land formally to the relevant Crown department to have those things addressed. So they can, in this instance, talk to Mitcham Hills Council, to their excellent fire prevention team. And as always, you know, those well-trained fire prevention officers around the state know that they can come to our team at CFS for any support in how best to deal with those sort of Crown agencies. And ultimately, it means if we don't get any joy or satisfaction through that pathway and procedure, it can be escalated all the way to my boss, to the chief officer, who's able to formally write to people as well and seek the action to be undertaken. So there's a good process in place, and it starts with local council there.
All right, Laney, there's the answer to that one. Gillis Plains, and Adrian has given you a ring. Brett, on the line now. Hello, Adrian.
Hi, Pilko. Hi, Brett. I used to live in the Adelaide Hills and grew up in the Adelaide Hills, and the one short fire warning was a fire siren. And I'm wondering why the fire sirens have been discontinued. I know some of the reason why, but I'm really thinking they should be reinstated given the horror of last summer.
Yeah, it's a great question about sirens, and it's something that there is a lot of angst about in the community. There's a big body of research that was done, particularly associated with the Victorian fires in 2009, that highlighted some of the risks and challenges with fire sirens, in that they only apply to the immediate local area where the siren's located, and that they often require the siren to be manually activated, which requires people to be there and for our facility to make sure it has power so that the siren can actually operate. Most of our fire stations aren't actually on backup generators, because once the station loses power, we can manually open the roller doors, we can get the trucks out, and we're not there at the station anyway. You know, we're off at the front lines. The other challenge with sirens is that some of them that might be automated are automated when the brigades dispatch. Because remember, sirens were put in before we had pagers as a way of notifying our firefighters in the local community that they were required to go to the station to get on the truck. So the sirens sometimes go off at the time the brigade gets the call. And the brigade might be called to a fire many hours before it even comes close to a community. This is why we suggest that people shouldn't rely on one single avenue for their information. So we suggest things like having that battery backup radio so that you can listen into the emergency service broadcast partners on those high-risk days, to having that going in the background so that you can be kept alert of any fires that occur, using the Alert SA app, staying up to date with our website and other things like that. And by having that range of options there, it's better than relying on just one, or it's better on relying on the siren that may not sound, and then people are left without any warning if that was their primary source. So it's not a decision that we undertake lightly, but it is something that for every person who wants the sirens more, I can tell you I've been equally on the receiving end of as many phone calls from people who find them to be very disruptive and quite a nuisance. And so it is one of those pretty pretty conflicted issues, I guess, but it is important that people have that broad range of methods for keeping up to date with what's going on in their local area.
Brent, just finally, somebody wants some information, and of course people want information as we head towards summer and the bushfire season. What's the easiest way of getting that?
Jump on our website, www.cfs.sa.gov.au. It's got a huge range of information on there, from those five-minute survival plans that I was talking about through to the rules and regulations around what you can and can't do in clearing your property and the best way to seek more advice for that. It's just your one-stop shop for all your information. And the other one is, if you see our advertising campaign, the Be Bushfire Ready, these are real men and women, children who lived through last season, who were directly impacted by it, and who will continue to be impacted by these fires for years to come. If anything's going to motivate you, look at their stories, listen to what they say, and please do some planning and help be prepared for the fire season, because we can only do so much on those high risk days, and it's all, you know, it all rests on people helping us to help them.
To coin a phrase, we're all